We were warned some time ago about Project Bluebeam, a false holographic invasion of UFOs. But would they go that far? Would they use holograms to trick us? Would they use it in warfare? Well, up next, Fred Bell. We will talk about that and much more with electronic harassment and just what is Big Brother trying to do? That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, to you longtime regular Coast to Coast listeners, you know Fred Bell. But those of you who are brand new to the program, let me tell you a little bit about him. He is a contactee. Was born in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and after high school, he joined the Air Force, trained to work on radar, and was stationed at a facility where there were numerous UFO contact reported. Following this time in the Air Force, he worked with Rockwell International and then as a consultant to various companies in the aerospace industry. It was during this time that he became interested in Eastern spirituality and studied with several spiritual leaders. He obtained a degree in alternative medicine, became a lecturer on behalf of the National Health Federation, which is an organization which advocates freedom of medical choice for you, the public. Here's Fred Bell back on Coast to Coast. Fred, how are you?
Hey, George. I've got a little bit of a rough throat because I was up in L.A. I did that lecture and stuff. Sorry I missed your lunch and...
Oh, that's right. You were there. That's right. I was looking for you.
Yeah, I wanted to be there, but I didn't get there till Monday, and you were already gone. And then last year, it was so divine because you had the honorarium to Zachariah Sitchin, and that little guy, he just loved you so much. And,
oh, my gosh. We miss him.
Yeah, we do, and I'm sure he's in a much happier place now. Just, I mean, if I were him and all the controversy that he stirred up, and after that luncheon that you presented for him with all those famous people— I think he was probably in heaven from that point on.
Let me tell you what's so funny about it. Of course, Zechariah passed away several months after that event, and I was so happy that we had that opportunity to give him that Lifetime Achievement Award. But this year it went to Danion Brinkley.
Oh, and my God, Damien's my old buddy.
Yeah, and Danion's speech was, "The last person they gave this to died. I hope I'm a little luckier."
Yeah, I think Damien, well, he's already been dead once now.
Yeah, more than that. Yeah,
absolutely. He bounces back.
Absolutely. Do you miss the aerospace industry at all, or do you love doing what you've been doing?
Well, you know what? Do I miss it? No. Because yes and no, for two reasons. I'm still connected with it. Gene Curcio is a good friend of mine. He was the founder of Emmerstat and a couple of big satellite companies. And I still have friends there, and I still get, you know, information from there. But would I work there? No. Had great laboratories to play in. Today I have my own laboratory, so I've been able to accumulate, you know, through surplus and that stuff that I had. So, yeah, but it was fun. I mean, when I worked for Von Braun, well, first of all, when I worked for Scott Crossfield, he was the X-15 guy, that was over at SNID Space and Information Division in Downey, California, and I got to sit in all the 13 different Apollo modules because I was a checkout engineer on those. So I'd sit in the middle seat, and I'd switch all the switches, and that was fun. I mean, I was a young guy, though, you know. Then we got down to Seal Beach and we worked on the Saturn. I started to see the political side of it, and then it wasn't so much fun anymore. So
yeah.
I had mixed feelings.
We're going to go 3 hours with you. If the voice starts to go, you let me know.
No,
okay?
It's fine. I got water here. I'll easily
right,
go
good.
3 hours.
Very good. Well,
yeah,
look.
I'm in perfect health. It just sometimes when you talk a bit, you know, it's like a singer. Sometimes they have to shut down for a week.
You're a holistic guy. You should have, like, honey next to you that stuff.
I do. I've been taking some oxycodone and a bunch of stuff. I'm fine.
Well, I've got to tell you, though, we talked over the last couple days.
Yeah.
How many people have been sick lately?
Oh, yeah.
Coming down with all kinds of things.
Yeah.
See, this is weird. This is weird. I mean, I chastised the World Health Organization last year, Fred, for that. They claimed that the H1N1 virus was going to be a pandemic and, you know, millions of deaths and everything. And, you know, it fizzled out. It never happened. I think it was
well, that's
a
part
hoax.
Of the scam. Yeah, like we can talk about them all you want. 1947, they were set up. Yeah, they're a bunch. That's a spinoff of Tavistock. And, yeah, no, that's what they do.
But now people are getting sick and it doesn't go away.
No.
And it just lingers and lingers, and then it comes back. And...
Yeah, that's usually it's swine flu, and these were invented, you know, in army bases back on the East Coast a long time ago. But the thing is, they have different agents in them that, when your immune system gets past so many genetic transmutations of dealing with the immune system, they reintroduce another virus that was not in the original, but they're like hidden viruses, and that's that's part of the science of the, you know, the eradication of the human race. So they have these hidden viruses. I work with a guy named Jeff Sutherland, who's world famous. He's worked on our QBAM project, and I've learned these different viral codes. It goes actually back to some of the early work that was done at the turn of the century when everybody was being persecuted. But yes, it is a very, it's beautiful how they script. These things are basically scripted. And all I can say is they're scripted genetic design viruses. And they do go away, but you got to know how to fight them.
Yeah, absolutely. Your new work, The Inside Track, The Complete History of Science. And you key in on a lot of things that government is trying to do to us.
Right.
And it's worldwide. Tell me a little bit about what you've been seeing, Fred, what you're sensing that's happening out there.
Well, what I see is, you know, first of all, I grew up as a scientist, a young scientist, and being, you know, developing neural stimulation gear that was used by the CIA back in the 50s, along with Stephen Irubaugh. And that was my first taste of the government. And that's when they, when they took over that stuff, the devices, the neural stimulation devices and the oscilloscope monitors that we did on the EEG monitors on the brain. When they took over that, they put a secret clearance on me. And I didn't even know what the secret clearance meant. And so over the years, I've had a lot of, that's why I wrote The Inside Track. And I was able to reflect on a lot of my companies, like iTech. There was a CIA-run company, a lot of CIA-run companies, and a lot of normal companies like Hughes Aircraft, and how, you know, when I'd go into these companies calling on them as a consultant, say Hughes Aircraft had five different blocks, five different buildings. Each one has the need to know. But with me, I went into building one, building two, and building three, and I was, you know, advised of their project, so I got to see the big picture. And that's sort of how it started. That's basically how it started. And since then, I began to see, when there was times in my younger days, I'd go into psych wards in these hospitals, and sometimes I'd go to old army bases where they were conducting, you know, experiments mm-hmm. on human beings, and I saw horrible things. I really did, and I can go into details, but I'm just, that was kind of the overview of it. And then when I got over to the satellite stuff, and I was working in Autonetics on the ILS, which became Star Wars, then I got the big picture, and then finally, when I started to see these keyhole satellites go up, starting with the one in 1991 on STS-38, I realized what was the big picture was. And then I talked to my buddies and got inside tracks on the different satellites and what they really did, not just internet and all that.
Well, you know, over the past few years, Fred, we've been getting information finally that talks about how government has done you know, secret testing over citizens, secret testing over soldiers.
Yeah.
And you know, back in the 60s and the 70s, even the 50s, if people had heard this, they would have said, that's nonsense. No. Government would never do that to anybody.
I know. You know, the government has been so deceptive since Roswell, as far as I'm concerned. They have been so deceptive. They really have. I have seen it. I've been a part of it. That's why I wrote that Inside Track book. It's like you just have to confess. I didn't know. I mean, I was duped. I thought we were doing some really cool stuff, and now it's turned against people. And once I began studying holistic medicine and how the electrical processes of the bodies work and the auras and the frequencies, I realized that some of these medical labs that I used to call in that were CIA-operated were doing the same thing, and I just wasn't paying attention to exactly what they were doing, but I was supplying them, you know, monitoring equipment for the human psyche and all those kinds of things. So today I can realize what it's all about. And now I've got the big picture.
Well, you probably thought they were doing great humanitarian things.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but, you know, and then on the other side of it, you know, when I joined the National Health Federation, it was started by Thomas Colson and Fred Hart. And that was, they were standing on the shoulders of a lot of people that were persecuted by the, not the government, not then the FDA, from the 1800s up. Even some of them had patents because basically they were saying, electrical stimulus has a great effect on the cellular structures of the body, and you can manipulate this in a good and bad way. And they were doing it in a good way. And of course, up until the 1980s, the government finally turned around, you know, publicly and admitted, yeah, this stuff's all real. And these Swiss companies over there in Switzerland are doing this pulse electromagnetic pulsing, you know, to clear blockages in your body that cause pain. From sitting at a computer too long when you get that cramp in your arm, that kind of stuff. And you see, and these things cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they're completely legitimate today. That's the good side of it. Now, just realize the other side of the coin is not the good side of it. You know?
When did this start to change? I mean, you mentioned Roswell. Was that the event that made government decide to be deceptive?
I think it was because in the first day, you know, they admitted that there was a spaceship that crashed. And, you know, I got insight on that one because of my friend Clay Davis. Clay Davis, he was working with me at NASA in 1963 at Seal Beach, 64. And I told Clay Davis, I told him about Roswell. And his dad worked under Atwood, who was the vice president of North America at that time, Clay Davis Jr., and he was a senior engineer in development. So I told Clay, I said, you know, up there at Roswell, I know that was a real ship that crashed, and I know that there were bodies, and they were examined and confiscated by the government. And so Clay, he didn't believe me. You know, he's a real smart young engineer, hot head. So he went home and told his dad.
And most people would not believe you at that time, right?
No, they would not believe me. But Clay went back and told his dad, who was a director under Atwood, who was vice president of North American Rockwell, and that was a big position in those days. And his comment, Clay Sr. says, yeah, Fred Bell's telling you the truth. I was one of the 18 specialists that went out there, and I saw those bodies. And he said, we had one guy was a dentist, one guy was a this and that. He named all the things off. And he was one of the technical guys representing Rockwell, because Rockwell, of course, was contracting, you know, everything from the, you know, Super Sabres to the P-51. So they were heavily involved with Rockwell in the government. And he says, so Clay Jr. comes back the next day. He says, I apologize. He says, Fred, I says, my dad verified what you said. You're not a nut anymore. And I had a completely different relationship with this kid for the rest of our lives, you know, even now. So.
Do you know if Rockwell got any instrumentation to try to do some reverse engineering?
I'm sure they did. But, you know, I was also an employee of Lockheed earlier. Actually, after that, I went to Lockheed for a little while. Kelly Johnson was, you know, he was a homeboy from Ann Arbor. And Lockheed had the real heads up on that, because they were doing some advanced propulsion systems even before the reverse engineering stuff came along. So I'm very sure that Lockheed was probably one of the leaders in that. Rockwell was kind of a, you know, Rockwell overall was pretty good. We built the F1 engines for the Saturn, which are 1 million pounds thrust out of Santa Ana in California and all those places. And Rockwell, you know, Autonetics Division pioneered microcircuitry. But as far as alien technology, I didn't see them doing that much. I saw other companies doing more.
Let's talk about the key factors of the book, The Inside Track. Tell me about holograms, first of all, Fred.
Okay.
Explain how they work.
Okay. This is where I got to take some time on this one to get it right, you know, where people understand it. But, you know, for a long time, we looked at the body as a cellular structure. And then we got into electricity. Oh, my God, the brain emits, you know, electrical pulses. And that creates an aura field. And the aura field does things, and you can communicate with other humans. And so then we got into studies of, you know, telepathy and all these kinds of things. The Russians were great leaders in this field.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, physicists like David Bohm came along, and he died in 92, but he was one of the first perpetuators in physics of what the, you know, hologram was all about. And then another, Dr. Prebrum came along, and he was checking with rats. He was looking at rats. And he was cutting their brains up and putting them back in their head and doing all, and then running them through the mazes. And what he found was that even if he ground up a rat's brain and stuck it back in his head, he would still somewhat function. Now, if you did that to a human being, you would obviously destroy their intellectual capacity.
Sure.
But you wouldn't destroy their memory. So memory becomes part of the hologram. The hologram is something that has the ability to grow. And when we start talking about growing, you know, it's like I met you at a certain point, and we met each other, and we've done these shows together over a long period of time, and we have a connection. Even before you called, I was listening to Stevie Nicks, and I was saying, there's George playing Stevie Nicks. Stevie Nicks was one of my greatest skeptics when I first started Paradigm.
Yeah.
We became great friends. And then even your show tonight earlier, you were just so many nerves. So we're on the same wavelength on so many things. Okay, so that creates between us a quantum connection, as we would call it today. Now, a few years ago, when if you're looking at a DeLoire healing machine or radionics machine, you know, you put a sample in it, if something would happen, like a picture, and something would be affected, like maybe insects were killed in an orchard, you know, miles away. People didn't know the proper terminology of how to describe what was happening. But when the hologram was introduced, and when within the hologram, it has to have an illumination. A hologram is created, for example, by a three-axis laser scanning an object if you're looking at a visual hologram. But in life, you know, a hologram is made by the interaction of energies between us and other people. And this, as these energies take place, becomes what's called quantum entanglement. And once that connection is made, it's there forever. You cannot untangle it. It doesn't work. And then the physicist Alan Aspect demonstrated that you could split light in two directions and control the polarity of both beams going in the opposite direction at any distance in space and time. This was a big breakthrough in quantum physics, defining what the hologram was. So the hologram basically is an illusion. It's, you know, if I picked up a chair and I said, "Hey George, where did chairs come from?" You would restore to your, you know, you would resort to your historical ability to realize maybe a chair came from Holland or something. You know,
sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Some basic time and place. So all of this starts to build up, and the beauty of the hologram is, as all of this intelligentsia builds up and combines and intermodulates and creates a perfect energy within itself, it doesn't go away ever. And if you were to look at this as a big pie and cut into a piece of pie, it's a cherry pie, and you take that cherry apart and you cut the seed apart, every element of that seed is the same thing as the entire contents of the pie.
Well, is the hologram, Fred, then literally capturing a structure or something, an object, and then it's projecting what it looks like wherever you want to project it?
No, it's not where you want to project it, unless you're the military and you're using warfare. It's already there. You just have to become conscious of what it is. And that's where these deep, you know, forms of meditation and things that the Eastern people do, and we do here, and you know, it's being able to comprehend and reach a knowingness in the soul of your existence, in the soul of your body. You've got to reach this knowingness to really work with a hologram. I mean, yeah, you can look at 3D TV now. Okay, everybody's going to get a 3D TV. Okay, there's a hologram that you can see with glasses on.
Right. Okay.
But life is a hologram. You don't need glasses. You just have to see it that way. And then, and of course, it's hard to, because we get attached to it.
Well, see, and I'm convinced our little cell phones of the future will be seeing holograms of the person you're interviewing. So, for example, one day we'll be interviewing you, Fred, on this program, and millions of people will be able to see a smaller version of you in their homes.
Yeah, and I could look through my paperwork, but I've got a guy that's actually doing that now over in Arizona, believe it or not.
It will happen.
No, it's the University of Arizona has developed a real life hologram technology that goes right through the phone. I'm just looking up his name right now. I've been studying his work here.
Well, does the image look, is it like digital? Does it look broken up with little dots of light? Or do you actually see structure and texture to the face and things like that?
I haven't seen that yet. I mean, as far as holographic projections go, I think that the government's obviously using them. But I think that some of the UFO contacts and that people have experienced in a good way have also been holographic projections, wherein you cannot determine what's real and what's not, because there is no difference anyway. It's just a complete projection. I mean, that's...
Well, let's talk about that and what the government's starting to do with holograms, because you claim that it's going to be used in warfare, and I want to find out why. Now, you know, twice a month, you Coast Insiders, we do a special chat for you. I do the first Tuesday of every month, and then Lex, our webmaster, selects someone to do another chat during the month. Well, tomorrow on Coast to Coast's Streamlink, Coast Insiders, Ian Punnett will be chatting with you Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Pacific time. That's 11 p.m. Eastern time. So just go on, and you'll get the invite, and you'll become a chatter as a part of the Coast Insiders. And it's just a fun way of sitting back and getting to know a little bit more about the program in an hour of chatting on your computer. Eventually, we're going to put in a live video stream for you, so you'll just be able to hear us talk to you instead of us typing away to you. You'll be typing your question, but we'll be talking to you, and you'll see a little picture of us. Live video. That's kind of cool. I'll be back in a moment with Fred Bell as we talk about the inside track on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We're with Fred Bell. Fred, let's get into the holograms. Tell me about the holographic warfare. What will they do with holograms in warfare?
Okay, let me explain. I'd like to start with a person that I've studied. His name is General John P. Jumper.
John P. Jumper?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
He 1998, in a news item, he stated that the military will have the tools to make potential enemies see, hear, and believe things that do not exist. And also that same idea, by the way, was contained in a 15-volume of the United States Air Force Scientific Board issued in 1996. U.S. and air superiority on the 21st century battlefields.
So you might see, let's say, a visualization of a million tanks coming your way.
Well, let me just take it a little further here.
All right.
Okay. When he retired as chief of staff of the U.S. Air Force, he was born in Paris, Texas, and he joined the Air Force in June 66 and made Second Louis pretty quick. After graduating, he graduated from the Military Institute with a degree in electrical engineering. Okay, in the Air Force, while he was in the Air Force, he spent time at the Royal Air Force Base in Bentwaters, England. That's the site of many UFO incidents. He was the flight commander out at Nellis Air Force Base, and that's a control area for Area 51, and of course the site of reverse and alien engineering. He was on Area 51 a lot. And he was at, and his last thing he was doing was at Langley Air Force Base, CIA headquarters. So then after that, you know, he has every damn medal you can imagine, you know. After that, he became a consultant to several different companies, including he was at a Lockheed Aircraft as consultant. And then finally, after consulting for several different companies, he ended up over at the Carlyle Group, where he is now.
Oh, okay.
Does that tell you anything?
Yep.
Carlyle Group, Black Box.
The insiders.
The insiders, right. And he's a big guy over there. Now, just a few weeks ago, the Air Force, United States Air Force, once again, just bought a bunch of, it's called Persona Management Software. Are you familiar with it?
I am not.
Okay. They bought a huge amount of it, and what Persona Software does is manipulates public opinion on key information such as news reports, and it creates an unlimited number of virtual people that can be marshaled by only a few individuals, and it allows them to create the illusion of a consensus thing. And this, I just saw the paperwork going through the funding, you know, over at
Now explain that a little bit more. How would that work?
Okay, it's you can look it up on the internet. It's called Persona Management Software. You can create, I think each system that they buy can create 10 virtual people, if I remember correctly. So they can create fake news reports or any kind of news report from anywhere. They can, a few people can do it, and then it creates an illusion of a consensus of a lot of people. This is what they're doing right now. This is their newest software. Now, I don't know if it's part of the, you know, because the Chinese are trying to break into our stuff, but I'm telling you, this is some very powerful stuff. It just got set in for funding, and I know that they're buying, I don't know, several millions of dollars with this, Persona software. That's happening as we speak.
All right, give me an example how they would use it.
Okay, they would go on the air, you know, somewhere in other countries or here, and they would present a situation that doesn't exist. They would actually animate with people that don't exist and make it look like a real life situation. That would be one area that they could.
So you'd see video of, let's say, the president with a virtual reality person who would look real,
right?
But the whole thing's made up.
Yeah, and you know, example of that is that when I worked at NASA, now we did go to the moon. However, NASA made the big mistake of doing a heck of a lot of videoing in the studio.
Yeah.
And they made the big mistake of presenting that video later because they didn't have very good video on the moon.
It got mixed in. Didn't it?
It got all mixed in, and this will get mixed in. And you know, it's just like the other day when those birds dropped dead because of phosgene gas, okay, down in Arkansas, and a bunch of fish got killed in a river. Well, you know, what happened was we took from Iraq a whole lot of phosgene gas. But on the Geneva War, you know, the treaties of war, that's illegal.
Was it gas we gave them in the first place?
No. I don't know where they got it from. I think they made it on their own, if I remember correctly, you know. So what we were doing in near Beebe, Arkansas, and I remember I was stationed for a little while at an Army base down at Little Rock, a bioweapons center, when I first joined. I was in there for a while. But anyway, they were bleeding this gas into the ground. And I actually saw pictures of how they have these 737 jets. And just a little bit behind, between the front section of the leading section of the wing and the back section where the front where the pilot sits, about halfway back, you know, you see these things. They look like they're governors. They're like they look like a horn sticking out the side of the plane. And there's a whole row of them. They're like Venturis. And what they did is they sprayed this gas, and it attacks the central nervous system and causes the birds not to be able to breathe, and they just drop dead instantly. If you remember correctly, when they collected all the dead bird bodies, they were all wearing hazmat suits. Now, guess who brought this? Did you see? You know, the when that came up the day after that in Arkansas, and I was following this. When that came up, the news puts out the stupid story about, you know, lightning and this and that.
Oh yeah, or fireworks.
Fireworks. guess who exposed it? Vladimir Putin exposed it, and I got it off the European networks out of Russia. That Vladimir Putin had been studying this because he'd been studying this phosgene gas because he didn't want the U.S. to have it. So he was on it because of what it is. We had it. He knew in Iraq that we got it. He's not stupid. He's a very smart man. I respect him on that level.
He
exposed that, and then of course it came out, but then it just kind of like fizzled out. I mean, that's the kind of undercover stuff that's going on. And who knows if they're dosing people again with phosgene gas, because that's some pretty powerful. It's the most deadly gas there is. You don't have very long to live once you take a whiff of that stuff.
Yeah. And so, getting back to the holograms. Mm-hmm. So they would use this software,
right,
concoct some event,
right,
start showing it on television.
Right.
Do you think they even have the capability of taking over the networks if they wanted to?
Yeah. I'll tell you why, because most networks, you know, MSNBC, all the major networks, it's government money that's running those. You know, if you start going against the government, they put pressure on the sponsors, and you know the story. I mean, the sponsors cut them off, and the way the thing goes. So, yeah, they have, you know, and as I wrote about my book, you know, CIA, you know, controls the networks. I mean, it's in a broad, you know, statement in my book from one of the CIA directors, I think it was Colby. And, they would. But then on top of that, you got to understand that they have these, and we had these a long time ago. Back when I started my electronics company, I got into some entrepreneurial things. And one of them was a 3D, it was before lasers were real popular, it was a 3D projector that would put an advertisement on the side of a building and it would almost look three-dimensional. And this was back in the 70s. And we could do that, forget the name of the thing, it sold for like a couple $1,000s. And we sold a lot of those for advertisements on buildings in the middle of the night. But today, from satellites, it's no problem to project an actual visual hologram. So, this, you know, I mean, even if you remember the first Iraqi war, when all of those troops suddenly surrendered. That was some of the delivery. I mean, I could give you some names of delivery companies that deliver this stuff. You know,
they took their uniforms off, put them down, and walked away.
Yeah, they did.
Then so I think some of them came back as those freedom fighters, but they ran away anyway.
Yeah, they ran away anyway because they were hit with technologies that are being developed even more now. And that's all part of this holographic thing. I mean, it's hard, you know, it's like when we work with the healing side of it, we have a process where we go into the body and we look at the inside of the body on a three-dimensional level, and you can see all these things going on because we use the thermal scan first, and then you can see what goes on in the body, and then you can project that into 3D imagery into a person's glasses. They're wearing these glasses, and they can see changes in their body when you apply different technologies and sciences that we've developed over the years. And it's really cool. This is stuff that I've been involved with. But, I mean, I can see the weapon side of it. I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, I went last year, last fall, I went to a 3D convention up there by the center where they play basketball there in L.A., you know.
Mm-hmm. Staples Center.
Staples Center, right next door there. And the people, Chinese, Japanese, Russian companies from all over the world were demonstrating holographic stuff. And one of the really interesting things that I talked to Wesley Snipes about it, because they were using it in some of his movie stunts, is that they have a screen.
He needed a holographic image of himself before the IRS got him.
Yeah, exactly. He did. But anyway, they have dancers. They would scan the dancer, okay? Then they have a stage, and there is the dancer out on stage doing this perfect dance. It looks like the dancer, but it's a hologram.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you haven't seen that yet?
No, I'll search for it.
Yeah, search for it, because they're out there dancing, and then they show you how they did it, how they scanned the person. And I'm looking on a stage, and I'm seeing somebody out there dancing, and there's nobody there.
So it looks like a person.
Totally. Really, really, very well done.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and they use special effects now for some of this weird stuff that they can't normally do, because once they map a person, you know, jumping and, you know, flipping over and doing what they can do, and then they take the computer and take it to the next step, which do things the person can't do, but they've captured enough imagery in fast succession so that it allows them to produce that image.
Well, look at that Super Bowl commercial with Joan Rivers.
Yeah.
For GoDaddy.com.
Yeah.
I mean, they put her head on some woman's body that obviously wasn't Joan Rivers.
Yeah.
But it looks like it's one of the same. You know what?
It does. I'm sure Joan Rivers liked that.
Yeah, she probably did. Well, she's probably wondering if they can do that for real.
Yeah.
There was an old movie called 7 Days in May. It came out in 1964 with Burt Lancaster, Kirk Douglas, about how the military leaders wanted to overthrow the president because he supports a nuclear arms treaty with the Russians, and the military didn't want that.
Right.
But the funny part about that movie, and I don't mean ha-ha funny, they had the capability of interrupting the television networks. Burt Lancaster was the general. He was going to take over the country. I'm not going to give that movie away totally.
Yeah, right.
But they did have the ability to hit a switch, Fred, and then Burt Lancaster, the general, was going to come on and say, hey, this is what's happened. We're in charge now. And I've always wondered if government had that capability.
Hey, government has that capability, George. Trust me. As you do more shows with more people over the next, I'd say, between now and this time next year, a lot of shocking stuff is going to come forward. Because internally, they're breaking up a bit. There's problems with the internal way the government works. People aren't people anywhere. And you can see all the conflict in this world right now. And that's being internalized. And that's something they weren't really prepared for. And not something they can really deal with on the internal level. I mean, this lady just got out of the Iraqi war, and she came back and two kids. She was just discharged. It was in the news today, and she's homeless. I mean, how do we take care of our people? I mean, our military should take care of our people when they discharge and not just throw them out on the street, you know, because she's a woman with two kids. That stuff goes way deep, you know.
Well, and it's sadly, isn't it the same way when they get out of prison?
Yeah.
They get out of prison. I mean, who's there waiting for them? What if they don't have any friends? How do they get away? Do they give them a bus ticket?
Yeah.
I mean, and where do they go? Are they set up in an apartment or a home? Do they have a job waiting for them? Who's going to hire them?
Yeah, it's sad.
Well, I mean, would you hire a bank robber?
No, I sure wouldn't. I mean, probably have in the past, but not intentionally.
No, even if he might be rehabilitated. You know, look, we've got a huge prisoner listenership to this show. As a matter of fact, producer Tom came up to me yesterday
right.
and said, we got to do a remote out of a prison.
That would be good.
And I said, I would do that only if we could do it where Charlie Manson is, because I wanted to interview him. I've wanted to interview him since I was in this business.
Wow.
A long time ago. But so we'll see what happens. Now, he got the idea with Johnny Cash playing at Folsom Prison.
Wow.
You remember that?
Yeah, I do.
So, but you also key in on electronic harassment. Explain what that is.
Okay, electronic harassment it comes in many levels. It's their surveillance, you know, it's imposed surveillance of people's belongings or surroundings, electronic, you know, listening devices, transmitting, imaging, all that kind of stuff. Micro recorders, you know, video cameras, like the news reporter that was harassed through the window of, you know, of her motel that guy finally went to jail.
Yeah.
Then there's electronic sabotage, which is actually messing up somebody's computer, destroying it, and they're using EMI pulses more and more. And then there's what we call, directed high energy devices, where I've actually seen microwave ovens taken apart and directing high energy beams, which causes heating because it's in the shorter wavelength, so it causes heating on the body. And then And then it goes up to, you know, the EMP rifles. And, you know, I mean, the technology really starts to, you know, blossom from there. And then it comes up to into a voice data imaging. And then, of course, the short wavelength imaging that goes on. And in that form, it's where, you know, this radar, there's a company called, I forget, it's down here in San Diego. It's called a radar flashlight. And what they do, it detects a human presence through doors and walls up to 8 inches thick. It uses a 16-degree radar beam, and it looks at your movements inside. It looks at how your vocal patterns are, all these kinds of things. They do this from outside your house. Now, they wouldn't be able to do it around here where I'm at because it only has a short range. But I'm just saying, in a city, this is no problem. And the radar flashlight, it goes into it becomes like an emotional cluster, and it goes into a large system that is, you know, put together by the NSA on everybody now. And so you have your vocal speech patterns, you know, monitored. So with that, they can then introduce, you know, radiation into the body, and it will actually cause you to have involuntary, you know, movements and things like that in your body. That's another form of harassment.
When some person says, Fred, that they're hearing voices in their head,
right?
And some people say, you know what, you may be a little nutty.
Yeah.
How many of them are actually hearing something, being bombarded by something?
A lot, because, you know, the first time that I had that experience was when I was in the National Health Federation at Chicago Rosemont Hotel. People came out, they were an 80-year-old couple, and they came to me and they said, this truck had been following around with a microwave antenna on it, and they were hearing voices at night in their hotel, in their apartment. And then they moved in, and then they heard voices again. And this is the early form of it. Well, I kind of shined that on. This is back in about 78 or 79. Then I got down to Florida. We were doing a show down there, and another couple approached me, the same thing. And another, then we got out to New York City and others. And pretty soon I had about 50 people telling me the same thing. And that was kind of my intro into what was going on.
You're beginning to think maybe something's to this.
Yeah, exactly. So that's when I began to start develop devices to stop that, to break it up. And then the bottom line was, though, it got more sophisticated. It's in the satellite technology now, and they upload these patterns like they would gather from the radar flashlight and other, you know, other sources. And you know, the people are then totally influenced by this. And unless they do something about it, and you know, you've had John Hall on your show before. He's a medical doctor over in Texas.
Right.
And he and I have been working together. He has literally thousands of people now that have this problem. And I've actually had thousands of clients that have these problems.
Well, how do they select these people to go after?
That's the $10,000 million question. You know,
and why?
I could not answer that. And so could John. They select people from all walks of life get selected.
Unless they're experiments.
Yeah, they're experiments.
It could be experiments. It could be saying, let's see if we can drive this person crazy.
Yeah.
And just, you know, see how long it takes. And let's give it a try. Now, again, back in the 50s, government tested chemicals and biologicals over St. Louis, over a Navy ship. It happened. It's true. They've admitted it.
Yeah.
So who's to say this isn't true, too?
Yeah, let me just give you a second here, some of the symptoms for those of you listening.
Let's do that when we come right back,
okay,
Fred. We're already at the top of the hour. Our special guest tonight, Fred Bell, author of The Inside Track. We'll get some of the symptoms of electronic harassment. Maybe you're being bombarded. We'll find out.